Hi, this is Beverly and this is Parent Talk with Bev. As you all know, I am a Black British mother of West Indian descent with two, well, I keep saying children, but they're adults really, because one's 19 and one's going to be 18 soon. And we're based in London, UK. Not an expert in anything really, that's what I keep saying. I'm just sharing my thoughts, opinions, and experiences in the hope that it helps another parent somewhere. So today I am joined by Chioma. Now, she will introduce herself to you, and then you'll discover just a little bit more about why I have decided that it would be really good for us to meet her and find out more about what she does. So as I say, listeners, we're joined today by Chioma. Chioma, welcome to Parent Talk with Bev.
Thank you for having me.
Oh,
it's
girlfriend.
A pleasure to be. What was that?
I said, yeah. Oh, girlfriend. I'm having gush times. My pleasure. So tell us a little bit about yourself. No, please. Tell us a little bit about you.
Okay. So my name is Chioma Fanawopo. I am a youth practitioner, but I've been working with young people for, nearly 18 years. Makes me feel old, but it's, I've worked with young people. I'm seasoned, yeah, that's it. I'm an experienced and seasoned practitioner. So I've worked with young people and families. So started off teaching, and so my first passion and love is education, and did some primary school training, teacher training, and then worked in a primary school for about 7 years, and then went to retrain about 10 years ago as a youth minister. So did a theology and youth work degree. So I'm a qualified GNC youth work practitioner. Mm-hmm. And then alongside that, I ran a youth club for about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And this youth club was interesting because it was in an area of London called Bromley.
Mm-hmm. Hello, Choma.
You can it's not down. We know. That's your son, one of your children.
Allowed, knowing he's not allowed to say the name, but saying it because he knows mom is on a Zoom call. So
how are you doing, Choma?
You're taking the mic now. It's fine. So did that for 3 years, started up a youth project from scratch, really all about developing young people, providing a safe space for them to be, set up activities. We'll go on trips into London. And actually, it was so surprising that this were young boys that lived in Bromley, which wasn't far from London. A lot of them hadn't been to London.
Yeah.
Because of fear of being on the train, but also a lot because of the 7/7 bombing that took place. Some of them were still scared to go on the tube. So it was really interesting. So we would do day trips. We would do coach hire sometimes and just go out and just have fun. So we had fun, but we also did a lot of social skills. We developed a lot of social skills. We developed cooking skills. And I actually found out that boys love cooking because I had this myth that they didn't, but actually they loved cooking. It was one of the activities they really loved. So we had a safe space for the boys to be in. And at the time, I used to think, why did they come? I'm a woman leading a youth project. But it was made up of boys. Mm. But they came because it was a safe space where week in, week out, we were there for them to listen and to provide support. And in some cases, some of the boys, and that was when I noticed that some of the boys had all transitioned from primary to secondary school and they were really struggling.
Mm.
And so as part of my dissertation for my final year project, I did a dissertation really trying to understand the transition experience of young people from primary to secondary school.
Yeah, a lot
what was
of people don't understand. I mean, primary schools do not prepare children to move from primary to secondary, and the secondary schools do not prepare. They don't have, I mean, I remember when my daughter was going to left primary school, and then the secondary school that we had chosen had a summer school, which was really good.
That was perfect.
That was really good because she was able to get to know some students before she got there. But then, as all things, funding finishes and you don't get to do it. Not even, I think they even had a picnic for parents, so that parents could get to know each other a little bit. But the transition, it's almost like you spend all that time developing them in primary school, and then you just sort of say, oh, you're 11 now, so you can get on the bus by yourself, you can navigate everything by yourself, bye, see you later.
And actually, and you're absolutely right, Beth, that this is the time, because some parents think that once they get secondary school, they're big people and they're allowed to do whatever. But actually, that's the time as a parent you need to be involved, like, even more so, I think. Be aware of what's going on with them. I mean, I remember my old son, so he's now coming to the end of secondary school, gosh, I can't believe that, in year 11. And when he started, we made sure that took him on a bus for the first time, because he was going to a school down the road, so he'd never really been on a bus. So did this whole journey over the summer with him, got bus passes for the first time, you know, just really did my best to prepare him, because I know that that transition, it can be quite difficult. So had lots of conversation, had lots of role play, and I think it, all those things actually helped him to settle better. Because what I found in the youth club was that actually some of the boys really hated school, that they stopped. But one particular boy actually stopped going to school. And so we had a situation where mom then felt bad because school were having a go at her. Your son is not at school. She's like, I can't. By this time he was like, he was in year 8. So she's like, I can't do anything about it. He's a big lad.
Really?
For my other younger children. Yeah. Wow. Yeah, but the mom started to feel quite, what's the word? Because she was raising him alone. There weren't really any male role models. And that was what, for me, I discovered that in all those boys, none of them had positive male role models. And that was part of the issue. I mean, so there, yeah, go on.
No, I mean, no, you're right. I remember, because I worked for Southside Young Leaders Academy, which is mainly, well, was totally for black boys. Primary and secondary, to work with them on the transition, work with them on social skills, work with them on leadership, work with them on community projects, work on their self-esteem, work on business acumen as well. And I know that you, I think you're affiliated to Westside Leaders
Academy. I follow them on social media. I know them.
You know what I mean? I think, you know, what you're talking about is so on point. It's so on point, you know. And even when you were saying, like, you took your kid on the bus, you took your son on the bus. You got two boys, is it?
Two boys, yes, 16 and 9.
Right. Okay. So you know, even in transition, you took him on the bus, even though the bus was just down the road. You did role play, and I'm pulling that out because I think some parents don't really think about the role play, or even about safety on the bus. About don't like my daughter. We had obviously, for my benefit, I wanted her to have a mobile phone. Yes. But I also knew that the flashier the mobile phone, the it would attract.
That's right. Problems. That's right.
So I had to teach her how to. I got her a crappy phone first.
Yeah, that's what we did.
How she would manage it. Then it was, there were some things like, if I said to her, if somebody wants that phone, give it. The crappy phone, they're not going to want it anyway, but I don't want you to get into any altercation over it. I just want you to hand it over. It's insured. Don't worry about it. Your life is more precious than this piece of metal. But if you don't have those conversations with your kids and they find themselves in those kind of situations, then they won't necessarily know how to act. So you've done a really
That's
great
right. job. That's right. And also, So we prepared him. And then when he turned 14, we live now in a predominantly white area. And I had to have the conversation with him about stop and search. And I said to him, you're a young black boy growing up in a predominantly white area. It's really important for you to know about stop and search. And I remember at the time, his dad, I said to him, you know, you ought to talk to him. And the reason why I said to his dad to speak to him, because he was a former volunteer police officer, so he was a special constable with the police. I said, talk to him about stop and search. But you know, he said no, because he will not be stopped and searched. But I said, why? Like, why are you setting him up for failure? Or not setting him up for failure, but, and then he said something about him wearing glasses. So because he wore glasses, he wouldn't. And I really thought,
what? Really?
So what I did, yeah, that's what he said. So I said to him, I said, look, I'm a youth worker. I know that that's not the truth.
Mm.
And then he said to me, because Dad says it, and Dad used to be a former police officer, I don't need to know about it. So I just said to him, I said, okay, look, listen, there's a video of one of these police forces, and they had done stuff about knowing your rights. What do you need to do if you're still? I said, watch the video and then tell me what you your thoughts are and what you got from it. That's how I dealt with it. And but what was it? Yeah, go on, you go ahead.
What's interesting about that conversation is the difference between how mums deal with stuff from prep and how dads deal with stuff from prep. And I'm not into bashing dads.
Okay? No, I'm not. I love dads.
I know you're not. Yeah. I know you're not. You know, this is not the children that we're bringing up. This is not the negative space that we're creating for them.
No, absolutely.
But it's interesting how little your partner said, but it was taken so seriously as a family.
It was.
It's important that we recognize that the relationship that boys and girls have with their father, dad can say one word and it's
that's
taken
right.
gospel.
That's gospel, that's right.
Spit out and spit out.
That's right, that's right. That's right, that's right. And I think this leads on to my other passion, which is showing dads the value of their involvement.
Yeah.
And this has come from my years of working with young people, children, young people.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly like you said, if dads knew the weight of and the value and the importance of their role, mm-hmm. they would take it more seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And that actually leads me on to something I'm really passionate about, that how can we as parents leave a legacy for our children?
Mm-hmm.
I say this because I know that you're all about that. You're really doing that, you know, with your girls and with parents and everyone. And so that led me during the lockdown to starting with my friend who's a school nurse, a series of parenting workshops. And as usual, sadly, it's the women that turns up. So mm-hmm. we've had mainly women. But really for me, it's about how can we reach out to fathers and say, hey, if you can be intentional about raising your children,
mm-hmm.
you're going to leave a legacy for the future. Mm-hmm. Because when we think about legacy, we think of money and we think of property and we think of actually legacy starts with simple things like values, morals, and how intentional are you? What are you showing them about themselves? How are you showing them the value? And I always remember the story. It did the rounds on Facebook of this boy that said to his father, Dad, how much is your hourly rate? Because Dad was so busy. Dad never had time for football. Dad never had time for anything. And the dad said something like, I don't know, £100 an hour. So this boy managed to raise it. And when he raised it, he said to dad, here's £100, can I now have an hour of your time?
Oh wow.
And that for me stays with, because it shows the value of this boy was even willing to pay his dad. Only I think he was probably only about 7 or 9 or something like that. But that's how valuable time is. And you see us as parents, because I always say children are only little ones. Those memories that we create with them, they last them forever.
Yeah.
They last them forever.
That is true, because I remember, like I think like yourself, I'm no longer with the children's father. We've divorced. And one of the things that was hurting me before we separated and went separate ways was the fact that he was in the house, but he wasn't in the house.
Yes, he was not present. Absolutely. Present.
And sometimes when I talk to people, you know, they think that single parents have it really hard. Oh, I feel so sorry for single parents. At least I still have my partner. Yeah, you can have him in physical, right? He can walk through the door, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's not part of the family.
That's my right.
partner didn't have the time for the children, all right? Yeah. But once we separated and I ensured that he had contact, they had a better quality of experience with him than they were having when he was living in the same house. Because he'd come in, get changed, go out, come in, be tired, sleep, come in, don't want to be bothered, want to watch something on telly so he can chill down, which totally understand. But if your consistent pattern is that, you can be present, but not present.
That's right. And actually, just to add to that, I've seen it around me growing up.
Mm.
And what has led to so much anger from the children later on, but also repeating the same cycle.
Yeah.
They'll do it because it's all they know.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's about how can we, and that's part of the legacy. What legacy are we leaving for our children? Because actually, if you leave that legacy of being present, when your child grows up, they're going to learn that it's okay to be present.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Be present. And this is where, be intentional. I say this to dads, and I do really like, my younger sister, she'll laugh at me when I tell her this, but I do this sometimes. And I see fathers, especially Black fathers, being out with their children, having conversations, being intentional. And I actually do stop them. And I do say, well done, or have a conversation, because I know the value of fatherhood and the involvement in the child's life. And I say this because I see it when children have that. I remember talking to this dad, he's on Twitter. And I remember saying to him, I didn't even know he had children at the time. I think his children are like 4 and 6. And I was saying to him, sometimes all it takes is the quality of the time. It's not even the length of it. And I said to him, if you can do something as simple as 15 minutes one-on-one time with that child every day, that it's as simple as 15 minutes, like reading a story. And even if you have to be as rigid and you time yourself and you say, okay, right, this is 15 minutes, let's read a story. You will see your relationship improve with your child. And actually, he sent me a message afterwards saying, you had no idea that I have 2 young boys and I think they're 4 and 6. And actually, that 15 minutes per child every day, that's only half an hour. He said it made such a difference to his relationship with his children.
I remember when I was running a parent course, because that's why we're kind of very similar. I mean, you know, listeners, Chioma and I are part of this group called Parent Power, and I've done a podcast.
Yeah, hey.
Parent Power! And, you know, I remember when I was working for Southside Young Leaders that I did parenting course, because it's called About the Boy. That's kind of what I was specialised in that way, even though I never count myself as an expert of that. One of the exercises, I like when I do stuff with parents that I give them something to think about, but also something to do and come back and feed back on. And one parent, I was saying exactly what you've just said, you know, spend 15 minutes. She had about 3 or 4 children. And I was like, 15 minute per child, just a conversation. And one of the, she came back the next week and she said, do you know what? She said, for me spending 15 minutes, I used the bus ride with one of my children, and she, her child, her daughter, expressed things that she hadn't expressed before, because she knew she had that window of time. And their relationship, she said, I didn't even realize that my relationship could get better from that little 15 minutes.
Right. Absolutely.
You know, sometimes when you say to people, you know, the change, and they think the change has got to be huge.
Yeah. Absolutely.
My daughter's come home from school now.
Hi.
They think the
change needs to be
big, but it isn't. Yeah. It can be just something really small. But as long as you consistently do the small thing, it makes a big change. And for the time, and this mother was just like, you know, the relationship with all the other children had improved. Now, as far as I was concerned, that was a success.
That's right. Absolutely. Absolutely.
That's for you and your family. When you're ready to tackle the next thing, then we're ready to tackle it. But
absolutely,
15 minutes of consistently giving time.
Yeah. Yeah. And because when I say, because actually, if you look at 15 minutes, I said to this dad, I said, at the end of, say, 5 days, that's actually an hour.
Yes.
You know, that's over an hour that you've given of that time. So 15 times 5, 75 minutes. You've given an hour and 15 minutes. You know, and when you add that over the weekend, maybe you give a bit more. That's easily, you know, 2-3 hours with each child. And being, so I think for me, it's really about being intentional.
Yeah. You've said that quite a lot.
Yeah, we created space and time. And there's a friend on Instagram that runs a platform, Intentional Parenting. And I, because it's a topic, I love that phrase, but she's got a community interest group called Intentional Parenting. And she has those conversations as well about how can we as parents be intentional raising our children?
Yeah,
and I think it's really cool.
So you've got some other passions as well. So
yes.
You've mentioned obviously the ones that I haven't got listed.
That's right.
Tell us a few more of your
Okay, so another thing that I'm really passionate about is about well-being and mental health.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it started a few years ago because I was born in Nigeria, grew up in Nigeria, and I remember when I came to the UK over 20 years ago, I used to say mental health is a Western problem.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, over time, I've come to understand that that's not the case. It isn't just a word, because actually, in places like Nigeria, even in the Caribbean, they're having incidents of people committing suicide and stuff like that. So it's no longer just a Western problem. It's actually that we need to end the stigma around mental health. We need to be open and honest. We need to acknowledge and stop the trope of being a strong Black woman or strong Black man or not talking about our feelings. Mm-hmm. And we've seen things like lockdown and COVID really exacerbate the problem of mental health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the statistics are staggering that I think 1 in 6, you know, but I'm sure that statistic is probably higher now post-COVID, that mental health, if we can be intentional again about early intervention, getting that help early,
yeah,
it wouldn't be as drastic as being sectioned, as being suffering from psychosis or even all the sort of it's treated. It's a little bit like if you have a broken arm, if you don't, or sprained ankle, if you don't get help early, it can get worse.
Yeah.
And I think mental health is really important, that early intervention. So a lot of children, a lot of young people, a lot of adults are having anxiety, depression. It's okay to take medication if you need it. You know, it's okay to get therapy. I have had therapy and it saved my life, helped me through a really difficult situation. Thank you. I think really that whole stuff about mental health and therapy and seeking help and speaking out.
I think, as you know, because I'm on the mental health task force, I'm a mental first aider, I've done the course.
Me too.
And exactly. And so you realize then that what you're saying is really important, that it's the early intervention, but there's a stigma within our community around talking about anxiety, depression. You know, you can say people aren't really righted and you keep away from them. But I then bring it to me as a parent, because, you know, during the mental first aid course, I realized that I had suffered from some mental health challenges. You know, I've come from a space where I have had some abuse in my life. And so therefore I carry that trauma of that.
That's abuse. Right.
Now, as a parent, when you think you can forget about that and it's not going to play out in your parenting, you're wrong. It does, and it plays out in different ways. And so, you know, like yourself, I've had counselling and I still have counselling, because it's about my mental well-being. And sometimes people think that mental health is outside the door, but actually it's right inside your head. I'm very passionate about look at yourself and be honest. Is there some support that you need? I've got parents coming at me left, right and center wanting me to support and help them. And obviously, like yourself, we both do. But sometimes it is about recognizing that you need the support. You can come to me and I can help you with something, but you're living with you. So you do to have, you know, recognize that if depression is something that's impacting you, then try something that's going to help you feel happier each day, something that keeps you happy each day. Because I'm happy, my children are. Because my daughter says, what did she say? Mum, you're the mood of the house.
Wow, that is deep, but that's so true. That is so true. And that's why I say to parents, and it was something that when we were running the parenting course over the 6 weeks during lockdown, you cannot give out of an empty cup. If you are not full as a parent, Mm-hmm. You've got nothing to give. And the analogy I think of is on the aeroplane, when they say to you, even as a parent, look after you first. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you've got your oxygen mask before you look after your child. Mm-hmm. And it's exactly the same. Mm-hmm. Because if you were not full, you've got nothing to give.
Mm-hmm.
So I completely agree with you. And actually it was raising my children. I noticed, just like you, I had gone through what they term ACEs, which is adverse childhood experience.
Mm-hmm.
Mine was abandonment. I was, due to no fault of their own, my parents left me in Nigeria. It wasn't intentional. And that led to a lot of things. And so when I became a parent, and as my children were growing, I noticed that it was impacting the way I was parenting them.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was when I made that intentional decision. And I remember when I said to my dad, I was going to therapy, he was like, ah, give me that money. And I come and talk to him. And I was like, I almost want to say to him, you're part of the issue.
And the thing is, what I tell parents, right, I say to them, listen, after a while, people can't be bothered to listen to everything that's going on in your head. But if you go into a one-to-one therapy session, that person's giving you 50 minutes for you to vomit out the things that are going around in your head.
That's right.
You should be able to look at it and to just to think, actually, does it really impact me? And you can say it doesn't, but over a period of time, I began to realize that the things that I thought were all right. And don't get me wrong, my mother has, you know, my mother has done the best that she can. And I think all of us are wanting to say our parents did what they could do.
The best. That's right.
They could do. For some people listening to this, their parents, they will turn around and say, my parent was not doing anything. It was crap, da-da-da, whatever. And I'm going to be completely different. But there is a footprint that our parents have left on us. And so just to be honest, that there's a footprint, and what's that footprint? And does it impact me? Okay, yeah, it does. Do I want it to impact me without realizing it? And this is why I like to explain intentional, because we can use words like that because, you know, we understand what that means. But really, it's like, do I want to keep doing what I say I don't want to keep doing? And if I want to, then I'm going to need help in order to stop myself from doing that. And we're not talking about drugs here.
No.
We're talking about facing the demon, in inverted commas, living inside your head around things that you've gone through as a child that you don't want to happen, but in some ways you can overcompensate for it when you've got your kids.
That's right. Absolutely right. Absolutely. I mean, I'll tell you a story of one of my relatives. She was a spouse of this gentleman, and he said, I'll never let what my dad did. I'll never walk out on my child, because his father walked out on him.
Right.
He said, I'll never do that to my son. Do you know what he did? He did exactly the same thing years down the line. Mm-hmm. And I think exactly what you said, unless we're intentional about saying, hey, this stops with me today.
Mm-hmm.
And although he never meant to do it, you could say he never meant, because he said it when he was 19, I'll never do what my dad did.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, 2-3 years later, he did exactly the same. So unless we're intentional about saying, this stops with me. This here, right here, stops with me.
But you know, what you've said there just has triggered something in my mind. Sometimes when a relationship finishes and you've got kids in it, right? Mm-hmm. You think that the relationship with your child finishes because you and the woman or you and the man
mm-hmm.
are no longer together. And actually, that's not it, because the relationship with the children and their father or their mother still goes on. Or it's a gap. So let's just turn this around a minute. Let's just say, right, that you're a dad, your woman has run off and left you with the kids, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, my child has still had the relationship of mom and dad, but now dad is the primary person who's taking care of the child. Do you think that that child's not going to have issues about mom? Do you think
absolutely
I'm not going to wonder, what did I do for my mom to leave me? And
that's right.
You as a parent, the one who's left behind, are not intentional, I'm using your words here, if you're not intentional about the fact that mum and dad no longer can get on, but that doesn't stop dad and it doesn't stop your mum from loving you. It's just the way that she or he coped with this relationship ending. I think it's important for you to know that your dad loves you. Your mum loves you. It's just two of us can't be together. Now, that's a simple conversation, but I've had to repeat that constantly. My kids are now, what, as I say, 19 and coming up, and 20 nearly now, coming up to 18 as well. And I keep reminding them of the fact that even though your dad and I are not together, your dad loves you.
That's right.
And you're still having a relationship with him. Good, bad, or indifferent. If it's bad, I won't allow it. But you're having a relationship with him. You're getting to know him for who he is.
He is. Absolutely.
Doesn't necessarily see eye to eye on certain things. Doesn't take away from the fact that you were created out of a relationship that was loving at some point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you're absolutely right, because I've recently faced a situation of marriage breakdown and separation. Mm-hmm. And I really know that children internalize.
Yeah.
And if we don't tell them, they make up stories in their heads about it.
Yes.
And so what I had to do with my boys, I had to say to them, and especially my older one, he was getting really, at one point he was very angry.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to say to him, your dad made a decision.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't blame me for it.
Mm-hmm.
Because I noticed that there was a lot of blaming going on. I said, your dad loved you.
Yeah.
And my bit is not to necessarily say bad things about him, because he's still your father at the end of the day.
Mm-hmm.
However, I want you to know that you're loved.
Yeah.
And also trying to get the right help and support for him. Yeah. Saying, hey. And he kept, he had this whole, what I call toxic masculinity, where he was like, I'm a boy, I don't need to talk about it. And I said, listen, if I as a grown up needs help,
mm-hmm.
how much more you as a child?
Mm-hmm.
And so he went to 2 therapy sessions. He was like, I'm not doing it again. So I was like, okay, fine. At least you've gone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But what I did with the younger one as well, I spoke to school and he was starting some talking therapy, drawing therapy they do at his school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really important that we acknowledge the children, because children, I always say, we as adults will be fine.
Mm.
Oh, it's the children that we try to be fine. We try to be fine. But a lot of times we don't think about the impact on the children.
Mm-hmm.
So for me as a professional who's worked with children, I know that things like family breakdown, and especially when it happened during lockdown, and when you combine it with a teenager who's taking his GCSEs and he's unsure whether it's going to happen or not, all of those things together, if it's not dealt with, it can so easily escalate and get out of hand.
That's true. That reminds me of so many things. So many things that I don't want to go into. True. I think one of the reason I said don't want to go into is because, you know, when you're in pain, it's hard to try and think outside of that pain. If I'm finding it hard to put into words how I'm feeling, how can I then go to the school and say, my marriage broke down? Me and my husband were at loggerheads, and I give my children some therapy. You know, that immediately it's like, you know, that's my business,
and
nobody my business, right?
That's right.
So perfectly fine. You still go to school, you do what you've got to do. But it's not acknowledging the a wealth of emotions that are underneath everybody pretending everything is okay. And my children said to me, which was quite telling, when things were a little bit bad, well, they were bad, and we used to argue, we used to wait until we said the kids were in bed, until they couldn't hear us, which was stupid because the walls are so flipping thin. My neighbors can hear us, you understand?
Yes.
And they said to me, Mum, we used to get out of our bed and sit at the top of the stairs and hear you and Dad argue. And I said to them, well, what did you hear? You know, because I was sad that they were able to hear it. And I was like, well, what did you hear? And it was like, oh, well, you just saying I'm not being unfaithful. I'm, you know, it's you that, you know, like I was begging him to understand that I'm not being unfaithful. I'm, you know, why would I be? You know what I mean? We've been together for like 12 years. What the hell? But I just thought to myself, I didn't want my kids to think that it was all right to constantly try and assure somebody that I was not messing around. It just, and I just thought, that's not really the message I want to give my girls. But I hung on into this relationship longer because I was scared. And I'm honestly saying, I was scared to deprive them of this so-called family unit of mum and dad. And especially as we're black, everyone just assumes that black people don't marry, you understand, and that you're always a single mother. And that's a lie, because there's enough black people I know who aren't married. You understand?
Absolutely, me too.
It was like I'm fulfilling a stereotype, but I was never part of that stereotype in the first place.
Absolutely.
And I just was like, you know what, sod it, this is not working for me. I need help. And if I need help, they need help. And by me getting the help, I was able to be freer and open with them.
Yes.
And, you know, to a point where, you know, I could talk about their dad and it wasn't the anger or angst of emotions. Or even if I did have them, I'd say, I'm really feeling overwhelmed at the moment and I can't speak any more about this. I'm still hurt by some of the things that have happened. And I don't want to carry on talking to you from a place of hurt. So just give me a little bit of time. I will come back and have this conversation with you. And then I'd go to my therapist and I'd say, this is what the kids are trying to ask. What the hell am I supposed to be saying to them? And then she would be like, role play with me. You know, what are the things that are going around in my head? What if I did do this? What if I didn't do that? And then from practicing with her for that session and then sitting with it for a while, I then went back to my kids and was like, okay, now I'm ready to, yes, it hurts. I can't put words into it, but you know, but the love I have and the love for you, the fact that your father's given me the two of you, this is a gift that I, you know, I don't regret any of this. Do you know what I mean? But you
absolutely
support to be able to have that kind of conversation. Otherwise it's just going to be like, we don't really want your father. Don't mention your father's name.
It's true. Real talk, Bev. Like, you're speaking real issues, because and then that's what happens a lot of times. You know, things like this happen and children are in the middle of it, and it's not fair. But when we do and we get the support, and that's what helped me.
Yeah.
I literally was saying to my therapist today, she was actually saying last week, she said, I'm so proud of you, you've come a long way. You know, because when I first started my sessions, I couldn't talk about my feelings. Whenever feelings came up, I would go around in a circle, and it was actually unintentional, but I would run rings around not being open and honest and talking about how I was feeling. And so she said to me last week, the fact that you were feeling really overwhelmed, you acknowledged how you were feeling, you checked in with yourself, you were able to communicate it with your children, and they noticed that you were being moody. She's like, well done. You know, and so for me, it showed me, and I want to say well done to you as well, because I know, as you say, we don't, especially in the black community, we have this, I call it the British stiff upper lip, but also the whole
strong what? You call it the what?
No,
I'm sure the Wi-Fi dropped out. What do you call it?
No, but we don't like to talk and be open about it. Everyone is like, yeah, we're fine here, nothing to see, nothing to hear. But actually, I realized something. Do you know what I realized recently? Sorry, I just want to say something. Silence can kill.
I'm nodding my head.
Yes. Because, and I say this because I have seen and I know people that have experienced things behind the closed doors of a home that has led to, in some cases, stroke.
Yes. Yes. Because
people
realize they carry those emotions.
Emotions,
Sorry, speak. You speak. Yes.
So silence can kill. And I think that's why, and actually, the end of last year, I turned 40 and I decided that
You look good.
I'm done with being quiet. Thank you. I'm done with being quiet. I'm done with performing. I'm done. I'm so done. Like, it's about openness and transparency. And actually, still listening to this podcast called Their Future Wife, and it really cracks me up. It's really so good about, and the guy who is an American playwright, and he, the phrase he uses, living intentionally and transparently. And that's the season I'm in right now, mm-hmm. where I want to live transparently and intentionally mm-hmm. and openly. Mm-hmm. Because through that, you're able to be freer. You've got nothing that you're hiding, no cockroaches in your cupboard, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You're free and you can leave. And there's something about freedom and liberty that doesn't weigh down your soul and weigh down yourself. And, you know, I was listening to this mental health. Sorry, you wanted to say something. I'll finish with this. I'll let you say. He is cool. What if I can say his name? Was at the weekend, and he, Dr. Delroy Hall, he's on Twitter and on Facebook, and he was sharing at this event, and he said something. He said, as Black people, due to the racism that we've experienced and due to stuff that we've experienced, our amygdala is always activated. So the amygdala is the part of the brain that deals with the whole fight or flight notion. But because we are constantly on a super vigilant alert due to racism, due to fear, he said, we do not switch off. Mm-hmm. And he said, that impacts, it impacts you. He says it leads to weakened immune system. He said fear and stress constantly living on that leads to weakened immune system and health problems. And when he said that, I was like, I'm so glad I'm on this journey. I'm on this year because I'm done with it, yeah. You know, because, and we wonder why they talk about morbidity and, you know, the complex sort of issues that sometimes we have Black people can have, because some of it is as a result of, you know, racism. I mean, I noticed in our mental health first aid course, and it was a question I had to ask again when I saw that bit, that racism and being a minority and being discriminated against can lead to mental health problems.
Of course.
So I had to ask that. I had to ask that question again when I saw it. I was like, I asked the course leader to say, is this really the case? I was like, this is proven. So why are we not addressing it much more than we should be?
You know, the reality of what you've said, silence can kill. And the impact on mental health. And the fact that when people, I worked in environments where, you know, I have been the minority, and especially in senior management, the higher up you go, the less. And there was a time where I thought that to become more English would lead to a level of acceptancy, that the things that I was saying would be valid. And every time you bring anything up about the race perspective, it was like, you know, well, we're not really looking at that, Beverly. Well, why do you constantly, you know, why do you think that's important here? And I'd be like, well, first of all, I'm Black. Second of all, I see the world as a Black person. I see the world as a woman. And that's, I think, right, as a Black woman, you know, there's certain privileges that they're different. So as a parent, when my kids were little, I used to take them to all these 1 o'clock clubs.
Mm-hmm.
And I live Brixton area. That's where I was mainly when I started having my children. And I went to lots of them because I wanted to expose myself and my children to difference. And as soon as you went sort of like Brockwell Park area, you know, you had these mothers, yes, we call them yummy mummies.
Yes.
Pushing these 5,000 pound buggies. And
yep.
Oh, Rupert, darling, blah, 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 rear, tear, tear. And then I used to find myself saying, oh, so-and-so, because my kids' names, I'd be like, could you not do that, please? And then I'd be like, hang on a minute, that's not me.
That's not you.
But then when I would use my way of doing it, they would huddle their children in a corner and just say, oh, that seems like a very angry mummy.
Yes.
And I'd be like, I'm not angry. Like my daughter said to me the other day, and she said, Mum, we knew from your voice when we needed to fix up. Yeah. So I'd be like very English-fied.
Mm-hmm.
No, don't do that. And then I see you do it the third time. I'll tell you already.
Exactly.
Then suddenly they huddle their children in one corner.
Yes.
She's quite aggressive, isn't she?
Yes.
And then I was like, you know what? I really don't give a about you geezers.
Yes.
What are you talking about? I'm trying to rear my child the best way I know how. And I've got multiple layers that I've got to prepare this child for. Not only have I got girl pitney, not only have I got the issues around how much we can and cannot afford and what we're
going
to. Mm-hmm. Teach them how to handle the subtle forms of racism
that come
their way. And it's not about you as per se, darling. It's about how other people are trying to label you.
That's right.
Their stereotype about how you should act.
That's right. Now, absolutely.
We could go on forever on this.
We could.
The listeners are going to have to just go with the flow. I'm going to ask you to come back because you still haven't talked about
lots of things.
Because you did a presentation for our parent power group on
County Lines.
Right? You haven't talked about youth safety, which is another passion of yours. I'm just naming them. You haven't talked about technology, which is another passion. You understand what I mean? Choma, you've got to come back.
I will do. I love to.
I love to. We got enough. As Black parents and Black women, we have a lot between all of our stories, just yours and mine, but also the extended family that are listening outside here. There's enough things that we can talk about with a view to healing our families, ourselves.
That's right.
You understand?
And absolutely.
You've given us some gems here about being intentional.
Yes.
You've talked openly about mental well-being being really important and even shared with us that you are in therapy, just like I'm in therapy, right? I'm not ashamed to talk about that.
Nope, me too.
That you've given us some gems about, you know, Dr. Delroy Hall, that people can actually listen to that on Twitter. Where can we find out more if people want to come to find out what you're doing or to, you know, engage with you?
So on Twitter, I'm at Chioma Youth Work. So you can follow me on Twitter. Youth Work. Chioma. So I'll spell it phonetically. Charlie Hotel India Oscar Mike Alpha. Sorry, I'm showing off there, but yeah.
You be as phonetical as you like, love. But yeah, so say that again, Twitter.
Yeah, so Chioma at Chioma Youth Work. So you can find me on there, and I'm a bit of an advocate on there, a bit of an activist. So yeah, things.
Ditto. But you've been on Instagram longer than me.
I have. So I'm also on Instagram, Chioma at the Parenting Power. So Chioma dot the Parenting Power. And you can find me there, find some of the events that I am involved in or doing. And I'm also on LinkedIn. So Chioma. So again, I'll spell it phonetically, Charlie Hotel India Oscar Mike Alpha Chioma. And Fana will put my last name. So it's quite phonetic. So I encourage you to, you know, it sounds different, but it's quite phonetic. So it's Foxtrot Alpha November Alpha Whiskey Oscar Papa Oscar. So Fana Wopo. So it's quite phonetic. So follow me on LinkedIn as well, and you will see all the different things that I'm passionate about, tech, you know, but also that what you just mentioned, intersectionality, because it's something that I'm actually writing a book on at the moment.
Oh.
And my book, just before I go, is called Catalysts for Change: How to Be an Anti-Racist Practitioner.
Wow.
I'm currently finishing that off at the moment. Follow me on some of this. And my website that is under review at the moment is called theparentingpower.org. So www.theparentingpower.org. It's currently being built, so bear with me. But you can follow me on social media, and you can get in touch with me.
Well, you know, you've given us so much. I just want to thank you so much for taking the time to spend having a chit chat. Because it feels like a chit chat.
It does.
And that you definitely come back. I mean, you know, definitely come back. We've got so many other things that we can talk about. We're both in the same kind of pool, so to speak. So, you know, that would be really, really, really good. So my listeners, look, Choma's done herself no real service here. She's a well-being practitioner. She's a speaker. She's a youth practitioner. She's a mentor. She's a mother. Yeah, if you didn't get that, she's a mother. She's a facilitator. She's an author. She just told us that her book's going to be coming out. And she's a bit of an activist. So this is a woman to watch for the future. Thank you very much. Everybody, thanks for listening. Be safe. Until next time, we're out.